Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever.
Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Marie.
What are you up to later? Want to join me for happy hour?
I'm all in.
And guess what's amazing? Our listeners and friends of the podcast can also join us because Brave New Teaching Happy Hour has officially launched. Cheers!
Cheers, everyone! We are officially hanging out a little bit longer after school with an extended, extra, private podcast feed just for you.
Yes. Members of Happy Hour get extra 15 minutes of the podcast, give or take, because you know us, we run a little bit long. It's just kind of how we are. But if you would like to get in on this Happy Hour action, please join us. It is only $5 a month. Head to curriculumrehab.com/happy hour and get yourself signed up, because when you're there, Amanda, tell our friends what we do every month for our Happy Hour members.
I think my favorite part is coming up with a new free resource for our listeners every month. And then we pretty much break down that resource and how to use it. We also like to have guests on to do extended episodes and even Q&A that's just for you about that resource. It's really exclusive and super private just for you.
So if you are like us and you like hanging out, you like chit-chatting about all things that are teaching, teacher life, and everything under that umbrella, join us for happy hour and we will see you there. Bye.
Bye.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching. Today is going to be another pretty English teacher-centric sort of a day, except honestly, and I know I say this a lot, this can go for a lot of different content areas. We're talking about choice. Specifically, we're talking about choice novels, choice text, choice reading. But like, I see where choice makes sense for virtually every content area. Hi, Amanda.
Hey, Marie. Hello, everyone. I agree. This does not need to stay in the English classroom, especially because Marie and I today are going to talk to you guys really 101, like basic entry level stuff on structuring a unit founded on choice.
Absolutely. And we're going to kind of make the case for like why choice is not just so important, but necessary in any classroom. Obviously, we're going to speak more to the secondary experience, but like every classroom, students should have choice. And then we're going to kind of walk through what it looks like to maintain control over your classroom and still allow students to have some choice and loosen the reins a little bit. So
When I was talking to Marie before we started, I think for me, the goal of this episode is to demystify what a choice novel or lit circle or whatever you want to call it, kind of a unit can look like, because I think a lot of us on the outside are watching other people do it and thinking, wow. And then they're thinking, wait, how?
Yeah. And going, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then they get into it and they go, it's clear as mud. Like it's, yeah. One thing that is clear is that it's time to cue the music.
Obviously.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, a podcast for educators challenging the status quo. I'm Amanda and I'm a high school English teacher in Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm also a high school English teacher in Southern California. We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show.
All right, Amanda, let's talk about why choice. Let's make the case for choice in any classroom, period, but let's make it specifically about reading because that's our bread and butter.
Well, I'm someone that really needed a lot of convincing in this area, actually.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I am not a naturally inclined choice person. This is not my area of prophecy. I have had to find my way is what I should say about choice. So I'm on the side of being a little skeptical, a little bit unsure myself of what the real benefits were going to be to choice on the other side. You know, where I came from in my teaching experience, it was very hard to navigate everyone doing something different. It was very difficult and I didn't have a lot of support. And by the end of every time I tried to do something choice, I found myself feeling way more exhausted than I did at the beginning. And I found it really hard to measure any kind of progress or growth or skill or even really just knowing where all the kids were. So it took me a long time to come over to this side. And still to this day, I very much balance choice with force. if that's the opposite.
I mean, that's the conversation you and I have had before. So like backstory, just a little bit, for those of you who aren't like that familiar with what I do in my classroom, I teach on a quarter system. It's 9-week quarters. And then in January, I get all new kids and I start all over again. But both quarters, the main like chunky unit of study is going to be something having to do with choice novels. So I have always incorporated choice wherever I could, barring financial issues, but even so, I found ways around it since I started teaching. Like I tried to give as much choice as possible. And I have definitely done a lot of trial and error. So I'm not here to be like, oh, you can only really figure out choice units after 15 years of trial and error. No. But it did take some time for me to really like refine how to maintain a semblance of control and how to choose what, as the instructor, I find important and therefore I prioritize controlling. And in for me in my classroom, it depends on what grade level I'm teaching. It depends on what the topic is that we're talking about. If it's a topic that can get real quickly away from us and students will get distracted from the skills we're working on, I'll maintain a tighter leash on what it is that we're doing with our choice unit. And if it's something like I'm working on right now with seniors, it's that same EQ workshop that we did a few weeks ago, that other episode, where we're looking this quarter at villains. Next quarter, we're going to look at heroes. I said, find some fantasy novels that are reading level, age appropriate. Your parents are okay with you reading. Here's Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. It's district adopted. That's your fallback plan. Other than that, I'm probably going to say yes to everything. Like that's where we're at because their age is right. I can let go a little bit of control. Well, I mean, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but I wasn't quite where you are, where I was like, I don't know about that. But I did find myself, especially early on, trying bigger options of choice with students, like a whole novel, not just like you have 3 articles you could look at, choose one. That's a place to begin. If choice is something that's not regularly part of your teaching practice and something that you want to incorporate, start small, keep the choices finite. And then as you get more comfortable, broaden and broaden and broaden. And then also as you get funding, I mean, let's be practical. I'm in a Southern California public school. Like I don't have a whole bunch of money for this. So it's taken time to build. I just talked a lot.
Well, but I think so to some of Marie's points, if we're going to start here with why choice, it's worth going through the messy part of figuring it out because choice is worth it. And choice is something that I also used to interpret only from the student's perspective. Like, you know, students need choice because they need to follow their interests. Well, you know, after a certain point, like I learned to see that choice was also a tool on my end. And as a teacher, choice gives me the opportunity to differentiate, mm-hmm. like for real differentiate, not pretend differentiate.
Actually get into differentiated, individualized instruction per student needs. And yes, it sounds so messy because it is until you can see it.
And something else that it helped me too was focus on other skills. So like when I took a back seat as the reading teacher and put kids in charge of choice, I then became much more focused on writing or a particular skill that, you know, all of the lit or all of the books, whatever we're choosing from, was going to help me bring to light and instruct my students. So seeing choice as also a vehicle for me to lead in other areas of my discipline was incredibly powerful, and as well as, you know, it is for students, but it's also for us. So those kind of things helped me understand why choice was worth fumbling around and figuring out the right pattern for me and what could work.
Well, and like to kind of piggyback on what you were just saying about how it's a tool for teachers as well, I think a lot of the reason that we shy away from something that requires us to relinquish control over what our students are doing is because we have so much freaking pressure. There are so many hats that we wear. There is so much that we are supposed to do and be aware of and take care of and orchestrate and all of the action verbs that are so taxing that to think, and now I have to keep track of 40 kids in my class reading potentially 40 different books. Are you freaking kidding me? There's no way, it'll break me. And so it's for a lot of teachers I work with, because you and I were talking about this before we started recording, but with the Caffeinated Classroom, my own brand, I have a membership called the English Teacher Lab. And one of the three main parts of that membership is the nitty-gritty, how to build a quality and highly effective choice reading unit. That's like a main part, mainstay of curriculum. A lot of the aha moments come from that perspective shift of being able to see exactly what you're saying. The skill focus comes into clarity when it's not just everybody looking at Gatsby and Daisy, but everybody looking at that type of a relationship within the characters of their own novel. And it forces students to do more of the legwork and more of the like transfer of learning, transfer of knowledge is what I'm trying to say, sorry. And the true deep learning, when we talk about concepts and we can relate them to things that are somehow, you know, relation that everybody has an understanding of within the class, there's a common understanding of something, whatever that is. And then they have to make that connection back to what they're actually reading. It takes so much less work on my part, the teacher, and I get to pay attention to, like you're saying, whether or not they're making that actual connection, and I get to differentiate and see it. They're not just regurgitating what I've already told them because they have to like do the extra inch of work.
So I think we're at a perfect place to jump into our instruction for you. So absolutely. I think we've made a clear case for why. So how do we get started? What's the 101? What are the directions? And Marie just laid out for you, I think, exactly that what that is. And what she's describing to you all is that I think what works best for both of us is that we're creating a unit,
right?
This is a unit, just like any other unit, that has all of the pieces that every other unit has. The text situation is different than what we would do in a whole class novel, but now we're moving to multiple novels. But that doesn't mean we don't have a gateway, an overarching essential question. We don't have formative assessments and summative assessments. So that to me is like, this is where we begin the process of learning how to do this unit, is actually by learning how to build the structure, those pieces that we already know how to do well with our other units, is to start there. And to kind of, I don't know, for me, I get shiny object syndrome when I'm like, lit circles, I want to make a list of books. I want to find all the books and I want to do book tastings and all the cute fun things. For me, lit circles 101 is structure.
It's structure because it's formalizing what has traditionally been thought of as loosey-goosey, just independent. When you call something an independent reading unit or independent reading project.
Oh my God, I cringe.
Well, I love that for what it's worth. When I taught on the semester system, hell yeah, we did independent reading. And it was just as loosey-goosey and frivolous and whatever, finish your book, don't finish your book, read a cookbook, I don't care, read something kind of a thing. And when that sentiment about it transfers into what we're talking about as a choice unit, that's like the downfall, right? That's where things go really wrong. But when the structure and the formality of a major unit of study is in place, it's the same thing as a unit studying Great Gatsby. It's the same thing as a unit studying Of Mice and Men. Or of course, I'm bringing in all these works from the canon.
But that's what I think what the majority of people are used to.
Right.
Right. We're still in a period, we're transitioning, I think, out of that. We're in a very cool time to be a teacher. But yeah, I think you're right. That's what people are used to.
Well, yes. And so, like I said before, it's a perspective shift to go, you know what? I mean, here's my perspective shift that I really made. And that's when things started to click, like probably, I don't know, between 5 and 10 years ago. Allowing students choice didn't mean that I let go of the focus on exactly what skill they're going to be learning, exactly what theme we're talking about. There had to be a commonality there. So that umbrella or that overarching something is pivotal. I mean, it's inquiry-based learning is literally what we do here at Brave New Teaching anyways. It is the cornerstone of our curriculum rehab course. It is what we do. And it doesn't get lost in something like choice. It's actually the only anchor that keeps it all together. Like, that's the thing, is something in common that can spread as far and wide across your classroom as possible, so that once again, students are doing the legwork, but we're all coming back to the same spot.
I think an easy place to start, if this is, if you're like, okay, I think the best place for you to start is really thinking about like that essential question. And potentially, I know for me too, like what helped was, even if you're not ready for a question, thinking about a theme or thinking about a really narrow type of genre, those things are a very helpful way to get started, because you're setting the purpose, right? If you're going to write an essential question that says, you know, something about memoir, right? I don't have anything prepared for you, right? Something, you're setting up the stage that we're going to be tracking memoirs of our own throughout this next 4 or 5 weeks, and then coming back together at the end to answer this essential question about something memoir or whatever that might be.
I can give you my example. I can give you my villains example right now.
You have a memoir example, don't you?
I have a memoir example, but I'm still, it's next quarter, so I'm still reworking it. But it's going to be something along the lines of, which is more important, celebrating the individual or finding where we're all the same, like, you know?
Yeah,
that's cool. And that's going to be an American memoirs unit.
Love it. But
right now I can tell you the villains unit. Like, the essential question for the 12th grade lit class that you and I worked on a few weeks ago is, who will determine the fate of humanity, the villains or the heroes? First quarter is villains, second quarter is heroes. So right now we're looking at what makes a villain. That's it. That's the whole question. What makes a villain, or what defines a villain, or something along those lines? But basically, I gave them some suggestions. I said, you're going to find a lot of really good stuff in the fantasy genre. You're going to find a lot of good stuff in the sci-fi genre. Superhero retellings are going to be great. But mind you, this is 12th graders. So like, they were ready to rock. I said, find something either in this room or in your own Goodreads or Amazon searching that has a clear trope of good and evil. That's it. And they did it.
And let me guess, at the end of the unit, they're going to answer the question for you.
They're going to do a definition. It's probably going to be an essay. Like, it's still going to be just as formal as any whole class novel unit or whole class text, whatever, would be. It's just that, I mean, and talk about the beauty from my standpoint, I don't have to read 40 of the same essay. I get to read 40 completely different essays, because they're going to be taking the reins on this one. Juniors, on the other hand, or like when I've done this with sophomores, we've been talking a lot about dystopia, right? One of my best favorite units that I teach, I'm going to talk about a lot during our dystopia festival in the coming weeks. So make sure, if you haven't, take a pause, everybody, listeners, go to bravenewteaching.com and sign up for our free fall festival all about teaching dystopia, because one of the days is going to be about dystopian choice novel units. Anyways, I don't know why I'm talking like this. I just got really excited. So one of those units takes like 5 different choices, because they're sophomores and it's always the first half of the sophomore course. And so they're young, they get 5 choices, and those 5 choices all have a similar arc. I mean, they are books that I have read, but when I first started doing this, they were not all books that I had read. One of the choices was Lord of the Flies, because I always have to include something that is district adopted. And then another one was The Gracier. Another one is, let's see if I can do it off the top of my head, Unwind by Neil Schusterman, Hunger Games, and then normally like The Maze Runner. And you know, I change things in and out from there, just depending on the year. When I first started, I think I had read 3 of the 5. And that was okay, because I was able to kind of guide them through the elements of dystopia and all of the same things that we would have done had we all been reading Lord of the Flies at the same time. I still would have given them that genre introduction. I still would have given them characterization skill lessons, you know, analysis. We still would have talked about the importance of setting. We still would have talked. But now that anchor is some sort of a common text that we close read together in those lessons. And then they go and they do it on their own. And it's such a better skill builder.
Well, and so what Marie's talking about too is like, the structure was there first, mm-hmm. by saying that this unit is anchored on the genre of dystopia. What Marie's given herself, and what we would encourage you all to do, is take that as that scaffold, that structure of your unit. I was just helping client of mine, and we put together a dystopian novel choice book club unit, right? Similar thing. And so each week of the unit, she's introducing or reintroducing a different element of the genre. So week one, they're going to focus on how citizens are afraid of their government. Week two, they're going to look at conformity and how that plays a role in dystopia. Week three. So like there's an overarching, but then if you really need it, there's even more smaller pieces to hold on to. And that's where your expertise as the instructor comes in. Again, like kind of to go back to the beginning of the episode, we're taking a back seat on the comprehension piece and taking a front seat on instructing in more of the complexities of how authors' craft works, how genres work, and how we understand and are able to respond to these bigger questions about society based on the reading that kids are doing, where Marie said, like the kids are doing the legwork of the reading, which is why you'll find most often that a lot of these units work really well with YA books, right? When you put books into the lit circle or the choice novel unit that are more accessible, more student friendly, they're more equipped to read on their own and then come to the table with some of these more complex thoughts and criticisms and discussions. And that is like harder to do when the book is harder. So it's kind of nice to have, like, that's where I was talking about too earlier, is like having the balance. I like to do a whole class novel on a hard book together, but then the next unit, relax a little bit in terms of the reading and step it up in the conversation, the, you know, the discussion, the debate, those other skills that are harder to get to when you're working really hard to get through a hard text.
And what's funny is I'll do the exact opposite. I'll start with the choice to really like dig into training and then jump into the hard stuff, or not that it's not hard. Like the skills we're talking about are hard, but like to your point, accessibility of text. Well, accessibility of text is everything when it comes to learning new skills. If you're going to give a kid Mary Shelley, Frankenstein, right off the bat and be like, we're going to dig into this analytical strategy and lens. And they're just like, it's a lot. We're going to start with something. So I do mine exactly flip-flopped, but that's also how it works for my teaching style, right? So that's the beauty too, is like, it just gives you so much flexibility and you can see where these strategies work best in your curriculum, in your classroom, with your kids, with your teaching style. This actually brings us to something I wanted to make sure I talked about. I always get asked about how much of a choice novel or a book club or lit circle, whatever kind of, whatever you're going to name it, how much of that is group work and therefore group grade? How much of it is individual and therefore individual grade? And I'm going to say an annoying answer, which is it depends. It depends.
Yeah, you're the worst. No one wanted it. No one came here to hear that.
I know. I know. Let me tell you what it depends on. It depends on what skills I'm teaching and assessing. If I'm teaching and assessing discussion skills, then there's going to be a pretty big group aspect to it. And like whenever I do a thing like this, students are going, or a unit like this, students are going to be in groups 100%. Sometimes those groups are going to be book specific. So they're all reading the same thing. Once again, depends on what I need to get out of it. Sometimes like with these seniors that I'm talking about with villains, they're all going to be reading different books unless they decide to choose a book together. It doesn't matter is the best part of it. I'm going to be assessing their questioning skills, their thinking on their feet. We're going to be doing some Socratic seminars. We're going to be doing all kinds of different stuff. And a lot of it is going to be group grades with individual prep work, like assignments. But then the true like reading assessments, writing assessments, it's all individual as well, but they get to talk and get that kind of work done and processing and analysis to happen with the group think. Then they work on their individual skills of showing me what they understood and writing out exactly what it is. So I say it depends because it just, it matters what skills and learning you need them to get out of it. And then you can kind of make it work. I'm doing a lot of hand motion.
You guys are not privy to the beautiful.
But basically like my palms are facing my shoulders and I'm going like, it's very jazz hands back and forth, back and forth. And that encompasses that.
I think where we want to end up in this conversation is with just another encouragement to think about lit circles and choice within the context of trying to become more inquiry minded. It's a mindset shift for a lot of teachers, myself included. I was there with you. This is not a holier than thou statement. It took me many years to get here. But when we can divorce ourselves from the idea that we have to know at every plot turn exactly what students have comprehended, right? That we have to know every chapter, what a student has read and how many words and how many pages. And we come, I think, collectively from an English teacher past of being very concerned about monitoring, grading, assessing, comprehension, and forcing students to fit a reading pattern and schedule that we design and we expect, right? You're going to read chapters 2, 3, and 4, and then we're going to have a quiz. And then we're going to read 5, 6, 7, and then we're going to have a quiz. Like, that's still part of the fabric of English departments. It's probably still the fabric of other departments that are not English that are using textbooks. And so for you to jump into what Marie and I are doing requires a little bit of courage in trusting students to read the books, but also to not be so obsessed with what's actually happening with the kids inside the books and more focus on what you're instructing in the classroom, because maybe kids didn't read chapters 6 and 7, but you better believe that when they walked into your room, they analyzed the power of conformity in that lesson that you did. And the next time they're confronted with any text, whether it's the news, another book, a poem, they're going to have the knowledge and the skills that you provided during that class period. And you didn't spend the whole week, you know, criminalizing kids for not reading according to your plan. And I say that with all, like I said, all the love in the world, because I've been there. It's really hard to step away from being the monitor over all the things.
And that's why you start small. That's why you start small and you start with a supplemental and you give them choices there. That's why you start with choices of short stories, right? Like, that's where, because you got to try things out. Like I said, at the beginning of this episode, we have so much pressure as educators, specifically as classroom teachers. There's a lot going on, and that's quite the understatement. So start small, just go a little bit uncomfortable for control and that sort of a thing. And the other thing that we would be remiss if we didn't mention is the idea of these work best, these choice units, whether it's novels, whether it's whatever makes sense for your content area, they work best when your assessments allow breathing room. And so this actually goes perfectly with our masterclass that you can watch anytime called Down with the Reading Quiz, a masterclass on formative assessments that really encompass a lot of what we're talking about and that still allow real, true assessment of student learning and student understanding with like the options for choice where you're writing one quiz. I'm going to write one quiz for 40 novels, 38 of which I probably haven't read, you know, like, and I'm not, and I'll still know where kids are and where I need to get them to. And like I said, I'm not an expert. It's something I'm passionate about because I've seen how well this works and sparks things in students. So if you want to take a look at Down with the Reading Quiz, head to the show notes. We will link it there. You can get the video like right in your email right now. So if you're driving, pull over. And it also goes through a lot of what we're talking about, how this segues into assessment, both formative and a little bit of summative, but it's mostly about formative assessments.
Yes. We just want to give you full permission to not be the hall monitor of reading comprehension 24/7.
Yep.
It's awesome. Okay.
Yes. And it's so much more fun to be able to breathe a little.
And there's so many other things that we're going to miss if that's the only thing that we're paying attention to.
Yes.
So with all that said, Marie is fixing her bangs and they're looking really beautiful today, actually.
I have to teach in a few minutes. So everybody, thank you so much for listening. We know this was a lot of philosophical, heady discussion, but we tried to fill in some really good actionable strategies just so that you remember what resources we have for you. We've got our Down with the Reading Quiz Masterclass. Head to the show notes. Also, while you're there, sign up for our fall teacher festival all about teaching dystopia. We have a whole day on choice novels, lit circles, book clubs, what have you. We'll be talking about it a lot more here and there. And we're going to let you guys go. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for, you know, just trusting us with these big conversations. And if you want to hear more about Lit Circles, or there's a particular episode that you really want to hear more of, leave us a review. Let us know there. That's a really easy way to get a hold of us. And we just appreciate those of you who have already done so. It's helping more teachers find our little community here. And we're just so happy every time it grows.
Absolutely. Like we've said before, we want to help start the conversation. We're not the end of the conversation. We want to help start the conversation for you and your department or your school or your PLC or whatever it is. So if there's a nugget, a little spark you can take with you, share this episode with everybody you know. And until we see you again, bye.
Bye.